translations and the purport are by Srila Prabhupada. No one could understand who was coming and who was going, who was dancing and who was singing, nor could they understand one another's language. Yet all unhappiness and lamentation were immediately dissipated, and people became all jubilant. Thus, Jagannath Mishra was also overwhelmed with joy. These are the people coming to celebrate the birth of Lord Chaitanya. Text 108. Chandrasekhar Acharya and Srivast Thakur both came to Jagannath Mishra and drew his attention in various ways. They performed the ritualistic ceremonies prescribed at the time of birth, according to religious principles. Jagannath Mishra also gave varieties of charity. Text 109. Whatever riches Jagannath Mishra collected in the form of gifts and presentations, and whatever he had in his house, he distributed among the brahmanas, professional singers, dancers, bhatyas, and the poor. He honored them all by giving them riches in charity. Text 110. The wife of Srinivas Thakur, whose name was Malini, accompanied by the wife of Chandrasekhar, Acharya Ratna, and other ladies, came there in great happiness to worship the baby with paraphernalia such as vermilion, turmeric, oil, fused rice, bananas, and coconuts. Purport. Vermilion, kai, fused rice, bananas, coconuts, and turmeric mixed with oil are all auspicious fruits, gifts for such a ceremony. As there is puffed rice, so there is another preparation of rice called kai, or fused rice, which, along with bananas, is taken as a very auspicious presentation. Also, turmeric mixed with oil and vermilion makes an auspicious ointment that is smeared over the body of a newborn baby or a person who is going to marry. These are all auspicious activities in family affairs. We see that 500 years ago, at the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all these ceremonies were performed rigidly, but at present, such ritualistic performances hardly ever take place. Generally, a pregnant mother is sent to the hospital, and as soon as her child is born, he is washed with an antiseptic, and this concludes everything. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So it's very nice to hear the in such nice texts how the birth is celebrated. So many people came that no one understood who was coming and who was going. There were so many people coming to offer blessings and good wishes. No one knew who they were, nor could they understand one another's language. They were literally from all over the place. They were just coming in the same mood of worship. Yet all happiness and lamentation were immediately dissipated and people became all jubilant. Everyone together, just because of this focus on this one thing, everyone was together. Suddenly there was a focus. Different cultures, different languages, different people from different places, different statuses, yet they're all coming to this one thing. And it talks about Chandrasekhar Acharya and Srinivas Thakur are both Brahmins, so they did the ritualistic ceremonies. It says that he gave gifts, Jagannath Mishra. Everyone was coming giving gifts, and then he was spending his time giving them away. Now, that's considered very rude in England. If someone gives you a gift that you don't want, you have to work very hard to get rid of it because you have to make sure that they don't see it again. But it's quite different here. Everything you have is going to be given away anyway at the time of death. Whatever we collect is going to end up in a charity shop or some relative's home. And it's dear to us, but not so dear to everybody else. So it's not, you don't start by collecting. And this is Jagannath Mishra is a Brahmin, Chandrasekhar is a Brahmin, all these. So they, among them, they collect something, and then as soon as they get it, they're thinking, well, I have enough. Who else needs something? Or who else can I honor by giving something nice to? It's a very, very different way of thinking. So we don't hoard. One of the particular characteristics of human beings in this universe is greed. It's a particular of the humans. Among demigods, it's enjoyment. and among asuras it's cruelty, but among humans it's greed, and we have a tendency to hoard, to keep what we don't need. And there's an envy in that, that you keep something you don't need when someone else needs something, but you just keep it just in case. You know, Prabhupada tells the story of the sack of grain in the marketplace, and the bird comes and takes a little bit, and the mouse comes and takes a little bit, and the human comes and takes the sack. We wouldn't think of not taking the sack. It's just how we think. It's unfortunate. So this is a very interesting culture where everyone's thinking of giving, not taking. Their culture is to give because that contradicts. By having a charitable disposition, it's not just simply giving in charity, but having a charitable disposition. It means when you think charitably. You think about others. You think about others' needs and interests and concerns, others' suffering. You don't absorb yourself in your own. There's enough in our own life to be absorbed in all these things. We have death and destruction and inconvenience every day. And we can meditate on that and, you know, become very self-absorbed. Oh, Krishna's given me such a bad deal. Why is there really a God? Could God be so cruel as to make me suffer like this? And we can start to meditate in all these ways. This is what it leads to. And it's kind of bogus thinking. It's not necessary at all. If we focus our mind on something else, then we'll think in a different way. So this is a choice. So these people have chosen to think differently, to think in a charitable way, because it kills greed. It means you think in a way that doesn't acquire and doesn't hoard. So when someone gives you a gift, you thank them very much for the spirit in which the gift has been given. And it's an act of love, an act of affection, an act of goodwill, and it's taken. And the actual physical token isn't so important. It may or may not be useful. It's not the important thing. It'll be useful to someone, and my job is to find out who that person is, if it's not me. So it's wonderful culture. And he's giving to everyone. We have the Brahmins here. We have the Bhatyas. The Bhatyas are the ritual Brahmins who come and compose shlokas, verses, particularly for the ceremony that's happening. So they'll come and they'll take Vedic verses and they'll mix them with verses to do with the people present and glorify them. So you've got all kinds of people, professional singers, dancers, and the poor. He gave them to all these people. And it's said in a previous text, I think, that these professional singers, dancers, the bhatyas, they're all dependent on donations. That's how they live. The poor are dependent on donations. That's kind of how they live. So find someone who needs more than we do and give it to them. Prabhupada's idea was that in Brahminical culture, he was just echoing the Shastric ideal. In Brahminical culture, the Brahmin gives away his surplus before nightfall. So if someone comes and gives you 10,000 cows and you only need two, then you have to get rid of the rest of them before nightfall. You have to give them out in charity. So you have to know who to give them to. You have to be aware in social context who's needy. Where are the people who need more? So it's a very lovely culture. And it's got all these, and then the wives come, Acharya Ratna and Malini, and they bring all these oils and things. And women know all the things that you have to do at these times. Men are a bit thick. We just provide the money. And women know that vermilion and turmeric, and you mix it with oil and you smear it over the body, and all the men are just watching going, hey. But they know this is the auspicious thing, this is the right thing. So everyone is bringing something wonderful to what becomes a festival. So what becomes a wonderful festival, and the festival is about blessing the child in this case. Maybe the festival of marriage is about blessing the couple. Maybe it's a funeral. It's about blessing the person who's passed away. So we've all come to give blessings, to give some good wish, some prayer, something kind, some form of kindness. And kindness is a symptom of a charitable disposition. So this is a charitable culture, a charitable society. It's not about me, it's about you. That's the basic thought. And Prabhupada juxtaposes this, where he says how it happens in our modern times. A pregnant mother is sent to the hospital as soon as the child is born, washed with antiseptic, and that's, it's not turmeric or oil or vermilion or coconut or fused rice or anything. It's just a bit of antiseptic and swaddled up and put in the place. And it's very impersonal. You can't even bring flowers anymore to a hospital. There's nothing you can bring. I don't know if... I mean, this is a relatively recent phenomenon. I was actually born at home, as were all my brothers and sisters. And that was the norm in those days. I come from Ireland, a poor country maybe, but, you know, it was, you were born at home. And you were there, and just after I was born, my siblings were brought into the room and introduced, and then my aunts and uncles came, and I wasn't aware of this, but I was told all this, and they all say, oh, I remember when you were born. They remember when I was born. They were there. And they could all bring gifts, and they could all bring themselves and be happy and everything and create a nice atmosphere. And that's the atmosphere a child needs to feel emotionally, welcome into the world, rather than just bright lights and the smell of antiseptic and someone swaddling them up and putting them away. It's like, welcome to the world, you know. We really don't care. We're under a lot of pressure in the NHS, and you've just brought us more pressure, damn you. Sit over there, don't cry, don't cry. So how much of a charitable disposition have we created? So that's unfortunate. I don't know what we can do about it. But one thing, it's in the very first verse, it says, everyone was chanting. Everyone came together and they were all chanting. No one could understand who was coming, who was going, who was dancing, who was singing. No one could understand each other's language, but all lamentation had disappeared. Everyone was jubilant. And this is a kirtan. This is what happens in a kirtan. So Lord Chaitanya starts. He comes into this world and creates the atmosphere of the Sankirtan movement. The movement of complete glorification of God. Sankirtan, Samyak Kirtan. The complete glorification of God. So it's not simply about chanting. But in this age, chanting is the easiest place where you can achieve this form of unity. Where you can come together and the focus is Krishna. And you just begin to chant. And it doesn't matter who else is beside you. You don't know who they are. You don't know what caste or religion or... You know, it's of no relevance. And they're beside you, and they're chanting, and they're singing, and they're dancing. And what's their qualification for dancing and singing? There is no qualification. Just open your mouth. What's the qualification for being a musician in a kirtan? The ability to clap your hands together. Even discordantly, you see many people come and they can't get the beat. I've seen people come for years and they can't get the beat. And they keep coming. It doesn't discourage anyone. No one turns around and says, stop that. You know, we encourage everybody participate in chanting. Doesn't matter what our language is, our ability to intellectually understand or share Krishna consciousness, we might have no ability for that, but we can stand in the middle of a kirtan, we can get up, dress up, and show up. Everyone's qualified to do that. And just be there. And then this is what happens. And it's interesting, we have this totally spontaneous spiritual act taking place alongside very ritualistic ceremonies. Two forms of religion going on simultaneously. And this happens every day in our temples. It was the most striking thing when I first came to the temple. And I saw on the altar, it was explained to me that this is an ancient puja. This puja, this arti, this is ancient. This goes back, the rules are set. The priests have to take a bath, they have to bathe themselves with water, then they have to bathe themselves with mantra, then they anoint themselves with tilak and anoint different temples through their body. So it's very ritualistic. And they go on and there's a set procedure and she's offering the flowers. So as you offer the flower, you're meditating. There's a certain number of times you offer the flower only to the feet. And then there's a mantra, pushpe, pushpe, maha, pushpe, sa pushpa, pushpa, sambhave, pushpa, chana, vikirnecha, hum, hat, swaha. So you're offering, making a swaha, an offering of this pushpa, these flowers. So there are mantras to go with every offering. It's very ritualistic. So I was standing there in front of this ritual, and all of a sudden someone just picked up a pair of kartals and someone took up a mridanga. No one asked anyone. Everyone just spontaneously did this. And someone started chanting, and the rhythm got going, and everyone was going from side to side. It's very difficult not to sway in a kirtan, or tap your feet at least. I see people in a kirtan sometimes in the street, and they're looking at you, kind of, you can see in their face, they're kind of perturbed by this kirtan thing, but their foot is tapping. It's practically involuntary. So the kirtan starts to go. So it's this totally spontaneous thing starts to happen here. That's got nothing to do with ritual or qualification or mantras of any kind, or to do with, you know, follow a set pattern. The mantra just takes off with whatever tune the person starts with. And they can change the tune and someone else can start leading. And it's totally spontaneous. So you've got this rigid ritualistic practice and this spontaneous outpouring of affection, both happening simultaneously. This is very interesting. It's a very interesting form of religion. There's a pluralism to this. Pluralism means two things, more than one thing at least. We're not advocating in reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It doesn't advocate one form of religion. It doesn't say that this is the only way. There are many ways. It recognizes that. Why does it recognize that? Does that not seem counterproductive for a movement? You're starting a movement of spirituality, so you start off by recognizing that this isn't the only way. Sounds a bit strange. Are we not supposed to go out there and preach to everyone, come to the Hare Krishna movement, shave your head, oops, and stuff. You know, there's a certain set pattern. There is a set pattern for those who choose that path. And if you choose another path, then there's another set pattern. That's two set patterns. There's many hairstyles in ISKCON, I've noticed. There's no one at the door coming in saying, yeah, that's a correct hairstyle. Yes, we haven't seen that one before. You'll have to wait until we clarify that. It isn't an issue. So for some people, their hairstyle seems to be a form of religion. It's like to get it done every week. That's a bit excessive, in my opinion. But that's their form of religion. That's what they do. That's their ritual. We all have our little rituals, our attachments, our ways of approaching the world. And in Sanskrit, the word used for philosophy is darshan. Philosophy comes from the Greek philokalia, which means the love of wisdom or the love of knowledge. And darshan is a very different word. We're not talking about the same thing when you say philosophy in a Western cultural sense. Love of knowledge is one thing, but how you see is a completely different thing. So I come into the temple, and darshan means to see the deity and to be seen by the deity. And if that's the case, if that's the basis of our religious perception, our spiritual perception, that means there are as many religions in this room as there are people. Because each of us is looking at the deity from a different perspective. And Krishna is looking at us from a different perspective because we're individuals. We're hoping that Krishna is seeing us, not just a blob of Brahman, that we're all just, Krishna's just looking at and we're all one. We're not all one. We're all individuals. So Krishna is seeing us individually. And we're seeing Krishna individually. And my understanding of Krishna and your understanding of Krishna are two different understandings. Thank God for you. That's to your benefit. So when we see the world, when we see Krishna, we're seeing different things. That's why when we ask someone to give a Bhagavatam class, Prabhupada said, so that person is to share their realization, their understanding, because it's recognized that everyone has a different understanding. We're all individuals. Therefore, there isn't one religion. There are many religions. There's one God. But there are many people approaching God. Is there a way to approach God? Ultimately, in our tradition, it's by Krishna's grace that we achieve a relationship with God. There's nothing we can do to force God to love us. God already loves us. He already loves us more than we can understand. We don't even understand what love is, in fact. So we can't understand God's love. So we can't force him to love us. It's a ridiculous idea. God will give us grace when we want it, truly want it. When we want an actual relationship with him that isn't us trying to force him to do something, trying to bribe him, trying to say, I'm going to do all these rounds, and then you're going to be nice to me. I'm going to do all this service, I'm going to spend years doing austerities and, you know, really going around like this. Life is so difficult being a devotee. And after 30 years, then you'll give me prema bhakti. It's a deal, right? I don't see anywhere in the text where it says this is a deal. And the texts are quite clear. This is the road to disaster. This is how you waste your time. This isn't spiritual life. Each of us is on a different path, having a different understanding of how to approach God. Some of us are struggling at this level. Some of us are struggling at this level. And Krishna, by his grace, can help anyone, can break through the illusion and help any of us become pure and simple and loving at any time. That's by his grace. That's our philosophy. Right from Bhagavad Gita through the Srimad Bhagavatam into the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered to be such a high book of theology for us. This is the highest book for us because it's so simple. If you've understood the Bhagavatam, you can begin to understand what this is saying. It's so simple. You can begin to see, actually, hang on a minute, there's different forms of religion going on here, just here in these texts. I think in a previous text, Prabhupada says, in the purport, these professional men earn their livelihood by taking charity on such occasions from the homes of the Hindus. Hindus? We're Hindus? Oh no. What's going on here? Again, this is becoming a bit complicated in terms of our identity, who we are, what religion we are. If we get Krishna's mercy by Krishna's grace only, then Krishna is the arbiter of truth. It's by Krishna's grace that anyone understands Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the one who gives us the idea of what truth is, what reality is. That means that no person or no institution can have a monopoly on the truth. Only Krishna. That's what it means to be God. Otherwise, we're accepting God's position by saying, I have the understanding of truth. This religion, this institution has the understanding of truth. Our philosophy is that Krishna has the understanding of truth. That's irrefutable. If we want to preach to effectively help people understand who Krishna is, then we attract people to Krishna, not to us, not to any institution or any religion that is all temporary. We may have an institution that lasts 10,000 years. Prabhupada said that this movement would last 10,000 years. That's only 10,000 years in the light of eternity. That's not much at all. This is just a blip. It's just someone turns the light on in Kali Yuga and then turns it off again nearly immediately. Kali Yuga goes on for 428,000 years. 10,000 years is not much. We just think it's brilliant. 10,000 years. There's a chance that I could make it life after life over 10,000 years. That gives me scope. But if we look at how the universe works, the vast, you know, spaces of time in the light of eternity, 10,000 years isn't much. This movement has a beginning and an end. Krishna doesn't. So focus on Krishna. That was Prabhupada's point. our focus is on Krishna. Krishna's God and Prabhupada's the boss. That's about it. That's our philosophy. And that's pluralism. Because in that broad-minded perspective, we can see Krishna in Christianity, in Islam, in Judaism, in Shaivism, in the Advaitin philosophy. We can give credit where it's due. We see people sincerely trying to understand the truth, and they're sincerely trying to understand Krishna from their darshan, their perspective. Therefore, it's only a matter of helping, giving them another perspective, putting our arm on their shoulder and turning them around and saying, look over there. And they go, oh, that's interesting, isn't it? Think about that. That's sharing Krishna, sharing our perspective, our understanding. That's all we have to share. We can beat them over the head with a book. As the Christians and the Muslims will do to us. And they'll quote their shlokas and we'll quote our shlokas and we'll just have our shloka belt and go out and take out a shloka and go, ha ha, got him in the head. And score points. Or we can share our heart, our understanding, our true, simple understanding of how stupid we are, how retarded we are in our spiritual understanding. But this understanding I have of Krishna is very helpful. Actually, I had an experience of this in reception some years ago, maybe 20 years ago. Does anyone remember, there used to be a big picture of Krishna stealing the butter in reception, very big picture. And he was standing there, and he was sitting there, and he had the pot, and his hand was in his mouth, and he was looking at you. And no matter where you went in the room, it was one of those pictures, no matter where you went, he was looking at you. So I was standing there, and I was with a group of people from other faiths. It was about 20 visitors had come from different religions. And I was speaking with them and giving them a tour. And we all gathered in the reception. And someone immediately looked up at this picture of Krishna and says, can you explain this picture? And I looked up and went, oh, God. It's not where I would have started. But anyway, I looked at the picture, and what it said to me just at that moment, I just had a little realization. Oh, there's a class going on. Someone's listening to another class because mine is so boring. That's interesting. But he said, I just looked and I saw Krishna and he was looking at me and he was eating the butter. And I was just thinking, Krishna's going to get away with that, isn't he? He's going to steal the butter, break the pot, eat it, now despoil the whole thing. And he's going to eat it, and he's going to get away with it, and I never get away with it. And that's the difference between me and Krishna. When Krishna does something naughty, the gopis, the older gopis, they get him and they bring him to Mother Yashoda, and they can't chastise him because they love him too much. And as they're bringing him to Mother Yashoda, they're falling more in love with him. And they get to Mother Yashoda, and they try and tell Mother Yashoda all the naughty things he's done. And Mother Yashoda's there, and she's looking at Krishna, and she's falling more in love with him. And as they're telling what he did, they're falling more in love with him. So they're all smiling. And Krishna never actually gets chastised. Because everyone loves him. Because Krishna can't actually do anything wrong. And as I was looking at the picture, I was thinking this, and I don't get away with it. I always get caught. And I didn't like Krishna for that, in that moment. That's the reason why I don't love him. I envy him. I hate the fact that he gets away with it and I don't. So they asked me this question. I looked at the picture. This thought came into my head. And I turned around and I told them what I was thinking. Now you might think, well, that's not a good start. You're supposed to tell them, the Hare Krishna movement is the best thing on the planet. This is Krishna and he's God. And you get down and you worship him now. You know, and shave your head. Here's a bag. It's got a razor and saffron dye. This is how we do it in Krishna consciousness. No, I just shared what was in my heart. I'm actually a very unqualified person because I don't love God. And here's why. Because of this picture. I look at this picture and I realize that God is perfect and everyone loves him. He is the coolest. There's nothing he can do where people won't go, yeah. The man, you know. And that's who I want to be. That's who I've always wanted to be. And I look at this picture and I realize how disabled I am spiritually. How far away I am from the idea of love. Not even close. So I turned around and just explained it like that. And everyone was shocked just looking at me. And the reason why they were shocked was they all found themselves in the story. They all realized, actually, yeah, I feel like that. Does that mean I don't love God? Oh, goodness gracious. You know, it gave them something real to think about. Because I just said what was in my head, but also what was in my heart. And if you share your heart, that's called bhakti. Bhakti is a sharing heart to heart. It's not head to head. It's not institution to institution. It's not mantra to mantra. It's heart to heart. It's where we're really at, who we really are. And everyone who comes, tries to be a devotee, that sincere, honest attempt, that may fail every day, but that sincere, honest attempt, that's your asset. That's what Krishna's interested in. That's all he's interested in. He doesn't care about our position or how we wear our dhoti or our sari or what kind of haircut we have. He has no interest. He's only interested in our sincere desire to love him. And if we don't have love, then our sincere desire to try to love him, to try to understand love, to try to understand love, we may Google love and find all kinds of stuff from Christianity and Islam and all kinds, and you'll be surprised what you find that's encouraging, that's inspiring. We want to serve Krishna. Where do we get the inspiration? From wherever. Everything is connected with Krishna. We shouldn't cut things out and cut people out. Francis of Assisi, the Catholic saint, very inspiring character. He was born in a town in Italy, the rich son of a merchant, and he had a transformative spiritual experience, and he wore sackcloth. Actually, the cloth that they make sacks out of, that's what he made his clothes out of. And he went out in the street, he shaved his head, he went out in the street, and he chanted hymns with cymbals on a street corner. He was like a 12th century Hare Krishna. And he just had this spiritual thing. And he did it in the same town where his parents did. He really embarrassed them. This was so embarrassing for them. Look at our son. Oh my God, the son of a rich man. Look at him. He's acting like a beggar out there. And he lived on donations. Incredible life. He used to call the son, brother son. He used to call the donkey, brother donkey. Because this was his brother. All these animals, he was a vegetarian. All these animals are there. They're all God's creatures. And we're here to serve each other. We're all here to serve God. He's a Vaishnava, a bhakta, without doubt. Did he know about Krishna in Vrindavan? No. Just because he had no knowledge of Krishna doesn't mean he wasn't in his context. He was doing the absolute best anyone could do. You can't take that away. You can't think that Krishna doesn't see that. Because he's a Christian, he can't go back to Godhead. That's telling Krishna what he can do. By Krishna's grace, anyone can go back to Godhead. This is what it means to understand Krishna and what love means and how he reciprocates with people. It's up to him. It's not in our power. We can't dictate to God who can go back to Godhead. You're a Muslim meat eater. Oh, they're the worst, we may say. By Krishna's grace, if Krishna sees sincerity in their heart, he can elevate them like that. He can just turn around and say, oh, the person does some nice thing and Krishna says, takes it as pure devotion and elevates them. He can do whatever he likes. We can't tell Krishna, hey, oh, hang on a minute now. You know, that's not ISKCON. We can't make policies that bind Krishna. Pluralism means being able to think broadly, to being able to appreciate broadly, to be really broad-minded. And we're so broad-minded that we can allow anyone into our kirtan. Anyone. Doesn't matter what your offense. Anyone can come to a kirtan. It means that in our personal practice, we're very conservative. So in our thinking, we're very broad-minded. But in our personal practice, we have to accept a sadhana. Each of us has an individual sadhana. Some people come to the temple every morning at 4 o'clock, some come at 7 o'clock, some come every day, some come at weekends, some come just on Janmashtami. Everyone's got a different sadhana, but you have to have a sadhana. You have to have borders where you say, I'm a vegetarian, and I don't gamble, and I don't drink, and etc. And you create those borders, and they restrict you from certain things. So you develop a conservative lifestyle. And everyone's got an individual understanding of that. Some people follow 4 regulative principles, some people follow 3. No meat, fish, and eggs. Everyone's got a different understanding. And that's fine. Let everyone start where they are and develop from there. Krishna says that in the Gita. That's his understanding. In the 12th chapter, he says, if you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this, do this. His idea is do something. Restrict your life in some way. Develop a charitable disposition. At least that. And then you'll become less selfish. You'll become less focused on your own navel. How do I feel? Oh, I feel terrible. I'm always depressed. I'm always in anxiety. Oh my God. What about other people? There's always someone else who's suffering more than us. Always, I guarantee you. If you find someone who's just lost someone who's very close to them, their father or their mother or their husband, wife, or a child, imagine losing a child if you're a parent. Anyone in that position is worse than any other suffering we can have. There's always someone who's suffering more than us. There's never a time when we can start whinging and stop and just go, oh, get out the violins now, everyone. It's time, I'm suffering so much. We have to get over that lamentation. And we get over it by this, kirtan. Coming together regularly in the Sangha of devotees, we may not understand anything intellectually about Krishna. With a philosophy may just go over our head. Every time we come to class, we don't know what they're talking about. It really doesn't matter. To hear it is only good, because it's about good. It's about Krishna. It's only good. But to come to a kirtan, anyone can do that. And just be there. We may or may not understand the philosophical deep import of the word. We may not even understand if the word Rama refers to Lord Ramchandra or Krishna as Radhika Raman. We may not even understand that. It doesn't matter. Just to come in that society of devotees with that open-heartedness, that gives us a jubilation that comes from within. It's not dependent on anything else. It comes from within our very being. And developing that mood, that's what attracts Krishna. Krishna is interested in our heart. That's all the rest of us are interested in, ultimately. When you meet someone, you want them to like you. Have you ever noticed that? Everyone we meet, we want them to like us. It's a heart thing. That's what conditions our relationships, conditions everything. And we shouldn't let anything get in the way of that. Not our idea of religion or institution or religion of who we are in terms of I'm a this and I'm a that. All these ego things, they're not as important as understanding our relationship with Krishna and everyone else's relationship with Krishna. And in our understanding, everyone has a relationship with Krishna. We can't deny anyone access to Krishna. We welcome everybody to come to Krishna. That's very liberal. And we can't force anyone to practice Krishna consciousness. It's their choice, as much as it's our choice. Krishna makes that crystal clear in the Bhagavad Gita. You look at his pedagogical method, his teaching method in the Gita. So Arjuna has his nervous breakdown. Krishna says, hang on a minute, you've got the wrong perspective. Let's look at this. How about this? If you don't fight, people are going to think you're a coward. What kind of a reason is that? That's a materialistic reason. It's just an ego reason. Yet he's telling Arjuna, this is one of your options. Why? Because it is one of his options. Krishna's not pretending he doesn't have that option. He's very intelligent. He's showing him all the options that he has, because they are all the options that he has. And if he doesn't show him all the options, and Arjuna finds one that he didn't say, Arjuna will have less faith in him. He won't trust him. Why did you keep that from me? Krishna is very intelligent. He gives him actual choice. He doesn't say, actually, here are your choices, because if you choose one of these things, you'll give more money to ISKCON. or you'll join ISKCON, or I shouldn't mention oneness because we don't talk about oneness. But Achinta Beta Beta Tattva means oneness and difference, oneness and difference. We don't have a problem with oneness. So we should talk about it. You give people choice and they'll respect you and they'll trust you. And then they'll make the choice that you favor, which is exactly what Arjuna did. After giving him all these choices, in the sixth chapter, he gives him the choice, sit in yoga. So at the start, Arjuna says, I'll just go to the mountains. You know, this family business, I can't kill my family, it's wrong. I'll just go off to the mountains. And so Krishna tells him in the sixth chapter, well, if you go to the mountains and you just, you know, disappear, this is what you're going to do. You're going to sit down on a deer skin and your eyes are going to be half closed to the tip of your nose. You know why they're half closed? Because if they're half closed, you don't fall asleep. And if they're half closed, you can't really see what's going on. So you can meditate. So he gives him the whole process and you sit there and go, and Arjuna's saying, I can't do that. So he keeps on giving him all these things. What about this? What about this? What about this? And at the end, he says, now deliberate on this fully and do what you wish to do. We don't quote that very often in ISKCON. But that's what Krishna says. And Arjuna makes his choice. And he makes his choice not on the choices that Krishna's given, not on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, not because he's a member of this or that religion. He makes his choice based on what Krishna wants him to do, out of affection for his friend Krishna, out of love for Krishna, because Krishna showed him love. In the 12th chapter, he keeps saying, priyostime, because I love you, because I have affection for you. That's why I'm telling you this. And Arjuna reciprocates with that. He reciprocates with bhakti. If we want to teach someone, look at how Krishna teaches Arjuna. Look at the process. That's how to teach someone. Teach them from the heart. Have actual integrity. Give them the opportunity to have integrity. And that's pluralism, and that's broad-minded. Yet in our personal lives, we can be practicing to a very high standard, but we don't impose that standard on others because that's not their darshan. That's not their understanding, their vision. They don't see the world like that. We've learned to see the world like that by the Association of Devotees. We can't force someone else to do it. We can just suggest. We give them the choice. We give them the information. This is what I do, and this is what I get out of it. And it's not just simply from the books, this is what you have to do. That's a bogus statement. They don't have to do anything, and they know that. Everyone knows that. That's why people don't like religion, because people come at them like that. And that's a sign of weak faith. They have to join, because if they don't join, then I look stupid. We have to have more faith than that. We have to trust Krishna, trust his process, and practice it. And it's exemplified here very, very nicely. Wonderful text. And it is now 8:45, so I will say, Krishna, Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki.